Thanks for listening. Join us for A Swamp Radio Christmas, Sunday, December 21st at 3 p.m. at the Florida Theater, or Tuesday, December 23rd at 7:30 p.m. in Lewis Auditorium on the Flagler College campus. For tickets and information, go to swampradiojacks.com. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
Hey there, boy. How's your mama and them?
The year is 1974. I'm standing in line at Publix right off the Arlington Expressway. It's not there anymore. It's just a bunch of weeds. My mom had me bike up to buy some bread and milk. Our neighbor, Mrs. Perry, was standing in line ahead of me at the checkout, buying a pair of nude-colored pantyhose in an egg-shaped dome. Our Canadian family of five had only recently transmigrated to the South. Most of the time, I just didn't understand what people were saying.
Hey there, boy, how's your mom and them?
I mean, I understood the mama part, but who was them? I wasn't sure how to answer, but I had been here long enough to know that not answering was not an option. So I took my best shot.
Hey there, boy. How's your mom and them?
She is fine. And so are them. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. You tell her I said hello and give that sister of yours a squeeze for me. She is such a precious little baby doll angel baby.
The cash register jingled and she was gone. I wondered if I would ever master this secret language and remember all the substitutions. If my next door neighbor, Becky, was over and we were playing in the den at our house, I had to remember at her house it was called the Florida Room. I would always say, why do you call it the Florida Room?
I don't know. Why do you call the Pepsi soda pop?
This was the beginning of a long line of comparisons. My mother's house and Becky's mother's house. A southern mother's house. And one that did not stand for back talk or mess. If you were at Becky's and a grown-up asked you a question, you better put a ma'am or a sir on the end of it. My own mother was feeling the full fire of the women's lib movement and had no interest in being called a ma'am. She was all about freedom and expression and feelings. Becky's mom was less interested in feelings and more interested in household chores. Mainly if they'd been done or not.
Did you pick up your room?
Yes, ma'am.
Empty the dishwasher?
Yes, ma'am.
Write Big Mama thank you note for the sweater she got you?
Yes, ma'am.
Usually by the third one, Becky might roll her eyes at me. The first time she did it, I let out a laugh. It was like sending up a flare. Mrs. Boyd shot back from the kitchen.
Just what in the world are you two sniggering about back there?
This was another word substitution, snickering instead of laughing. Or as her daddy might say, busting a gut. Which is actually a deeper kind of laugh than a snicker. I would bring home this new set of words to our dinner table and try it on my mom. Becky's mom said we should stop snickering and mind.
Mind what?
My brother would say. I wasn't talking to you. Then I'd say back to my mom, Becky's mom said that.
Y'all said you were working on your schoolwork, but it sounds to me like you're just cutting up.
What did she mean? What is a snicker? How do you bust someone's gut? What did she think we were cutting? My dad would shrug and keep eating. My mother would say,
those are not real words.
Well, they sounded like real words to me.
Don't get snarky. Finish your green beans.
Snarky, a Canadian word, much like the southern term for sassy or fresh.
How's your mama and them?
We're going to spend the next 90 minutes talking about mamas, southern mamas of the Northeast Florida variety, with a couple others snuck in here and there. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some mom stories, funny and all. And don't be talking on your cell phone or rattling your program too loud, or a North Florida mama in striking distance may set you straight and quick. I'm fixing to go see your mama and them. Y'all come too.
You've tuned your podcast dial to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun, homemade mixture of music and phraseology from the greater North Florida region, also known as the 904.
When I asked the cast and crew if we could do a Mother's Day show, they said,
sure, as long as it's not on Mother's Day.
Everybody wanted to be with their mom. So we're getting ahead of the game a tad early. We're hoping to broadcast this show on Mother's Day weekend. We are being hosted at the Spiffy Times Union Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Jacksonville, Florida. It's a friendly place, and the lobby overlooks the beautiful St. John's River. You know, there is nothing like a pretty spring day by the river, strolling with friends, grabbing some food truck grub, and if you're really lucky, stumbling onto some wonderful live music. This next group has been heating up our Spark District and most of Northeast Florida for a while now. We are so lucky to have them here on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Grandpa's Cough Medicine.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's time to do some picking. It's time to make some noise. There's nothing I like more than playing music with the boys. And we ain't just whistling Dixie.
Hell no.
We came to lay it on the line. And if you like hillbilly music, I reckon we'll get along just fine. Well, we brought our trusty banjo and our guitar too. Of course we got the doghouse bass, and yeah, our grass is blue. And we ain't just whistling Dixie.
Hell no.
We came to lay it on the line. And if you like hillbilly music, I reckon we'll get along just fine. Oh, play it, Brett. You know, some folks call us crazy and claim that we do drugs.
We do.
Well, that may be, but mostly we get high on flattened scrubs. And we're down with dear old Dixie. We'll hoss and I walk the line. Yeah, we dig hillbilly music and our buddy's big old jug of moonshine. Now, if you don't care for banjo, if it just don't sit right, well, I gotta tell ya, you're in the wrong damn place tonight. Cause we ain't just whistling Dixie.
Hell no.
We came a laying on the line. But if you love hillbilly music, I reckon we're gonna get along just fine. Oh, show 'em, Mikey. Some picking, so gather around real close. We're Grandpa's cough medicine. Come and get yourself a dose. We ain't just whistling Dixie.
Hell no.
We came to lay it on the line. And if you like hillbilly music, I reckon we'll get along just fine. Yeah, if you love hillbilly music, I reckon we're gonna get along just fine.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brett, Mike, and John, for getting things started. Kate Norton is a longtime actor, writer, and beach bum. She's also a dear friend. She wrote a special piece for this show. It's called Transplants. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Kate Norton.
Transplants. So, how many people here are Florida natives? Oh, okay. One, two, three. Okay, good. All right. Well, my husband was born at St. Vincent's Hospital in Riverside, but I arrived here from North Carolina one hot June day, landing at the Jacksonville International Airport, planning to do just a few weeks of summer theater at Robert E. Lee High School. And would you look at the time? 30 years and counting. Yeah. I love to ask people who weren't born in Florida what made them decide to move here. One Midwestern couple said they couldn't take one more brutal Iowa winter. And after 40 years, left family and friends to make a new life in Jack's Beach. And of course, they're the military families whose orders took them to Mayport, or NAS Jack's, and whose fond memories brought them back. But my favorite story is the friend who had an epiphany on a playground in New York City. As she stood in a line of parents, nannies, and kids waiting for her daughter's turn on the swings, she recalled an idyllic weekend she and her husband had spent at the beach here with friends. It probably wasn't July. But a month later, they sold their Manhattan apartment and bought a house in old Atlantic Beach. Now, after my stage turn, I found other reasons to stay in Jacksonville, jobs, and eventually my husband, Stan. Back in the 90s, we found out that we were pregnant with twins. So I called my mom, who was divorced and still living in North Carolina, to tell her the news. Well, she said, "Would you like me to move down to Florida and help you with the baby?" "Yes, I would." And so she did. This red-headed Irish Yankee born in Philly, raised in Brooklyn with a New York accent and an attitude to match, pulled up her Tar Heel stakes and bought a duplex a mile from our house in Atlantic Beach. And what was the first thing that she did? She planted an orange tree. It was a spindly little thing that didn't really look like it could survive even one of our mild Florida winters. But it was her vision, her dream of Florida living. My mother told me that her time with us in Florida was some of the happiest of her life. She loved her mornings on the screened-in deck of her duplex, having a coffee and a cigarette, contemplating the spreading live oak tree that shaded her backyard. And she loved our backyard. One morning, she and I sat on lawn chairs in the grass, watching the kids play on the swing set. Shafts of what I like to call glory to God sunlight were breaking all around us through the palms and the water oaks, and Confederate jasmine scented the air. My mom told me that when she died, she wanted her ashes spread in our backyard so she could always be there to watch our children play. I said, "Mom, what if we move?" "Shut up," she said. 2 years later, in 1998, my mother died of lung cancer, and I did as she asked. According to a Citrus Facts website, oranges, though closely identified with Florida, are not native to the state. Historians believe that Ponce de Leon and his men brought the first citrus to Florida during their exploration in 1513. The toddlers my mom and I watched play that one perfect morning long ago are in college. And every now and then, I drive by mom's duplex in Atlantic Beach. Her orange tree is taller than my son's are now, and the branches are heavy with fruit. Thank you.
Kate Norton, everyone. At our winner's show, storyteller Derek Coughlin charmed the crowd with his historic landing in Jacksonville from Ireland. There was something about the hot sun, the blistering sky, and his first sighting of a thong. We are thrilled to have Derek back. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Derek Coughlin.
I grew up in a house that was the absolute antithesis of feng shui. If there were ways that furniture alignment could blacken a mood, retard social development, drain a house of comfort and balance and everything that should be in a home, then my mother was master of them all. Her remarkable ability to to always put a chair in the wrong place was matched only by her spectacular inability to conceive of any other way of doing it but her own. She wallpapered everything. She even wallpapered our school books in great, swirly, floral patterns that she had found in obscure Norwegian interior design catalogues that only she had read. She carpeted all the floors and then wouldn't let any of us walk on them in case we'd wear them out. She tiled the kitchen and bathroom floors, knowing that these rooms would be most likely to encounter bare feet on a regular basis. And in winter, they were Arctic. She had her own bathroom. It had a carpet. We weren't allowed to use it, ever. After a few years, I began to doubt its very existence, but my father swore it was there. He had seen it once, before we moved in. The kitchen, the womb of all Irish families, was about as welcoming as an acolyte's cell. The walls were yellow.
Harvest yellow,
according to the mother. Institutional yellow, my father. The cabinets were dark chocolate brown. The fridge was too small, the table too big, the stove in the wrong place. On one of the walls, the ubiquitous Sacred Heart picture, struggling to maintain its dignity next to the Cancun calendar towel, hovered over our heads, bleeding. We prayed before it every morning, begged forgiveness for sins we never committed, had a spoonful of cod liver oil shoveled down our throats, and then were pushed out the door to school, our backpacks full of wallpapered books and the guilt of an Irish childhood. Thank you.
You can find out more about Derek at his webpage, DerekCochlan.com, and our homepage, SwampRadioJax.com, under contributors.
And now a story written by our own Lauren Fincham, performed by Kevin Roberts, about one of those special kind of Jacksonville occurrences. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Roberts.
I was driving down US 17 around 10 a.m. on a rainy Saturday. Running down of my mental lists of things to do, I was on my third cup of coffee and a bit on edge. The rain had slowed the traffic down and made the day more difficult. The windshield wipers swished back and forth, counting the minutes I was losing. As I inched forward, I heard someone calling.
Hey! Hey, excuse me!
I looked to my left. A beat-up car had pulled alongside mine. It was a late-model four-door that had seen better days. The front fender was dented. The door was bondoed. I believe duct tape held the window in place. The back seat was loaded with junk and scattered with used children's toys. In the front seat with the window down was a ragged man in a baseball cap and a woman with a cigarette. From the passenger side, she was gesturing me to roll down my window, and he was waving and calling to me from the driver's seat. The man leaned across his female companion and called out to me,
"Hi, can you tell me where to find the nearest AR?"
Okay, it was raining. The intersection was noisy. What did he say?
"Excuse me. Can you tell me where to find the nearest gay bar?"
Gay bar? This was not what I expected. It was barely 10 a.m. They had kids. Shouldn't they be tending to their children on a Saturday morning instead of cruising for a gay bar? These people did not fit their destination. They did not look like the cater waiters and the hairdressers that I knew. It was raining. I had errands to do. I smiled politely and answered, "Not really. I think there's one up in the neighborhood." With that, I gestured in the vague direction of forward, just as the traffic opened up and I was able to drive ahead. I rolled up my window and continued on my way. No, sir, I did not need people and their weirdness right now. A couple of crazies in a rattletrap car who looked like they'd been up all night driving around looking for a gay bar before breakfast had settled. I had things to do, stuff to take care of, and are they following me? Is that their car behind me? I pulled into a Dailies where I stop every morning for a coffee and a newspaper. I parked up front and got out of my car. Behind me, the rattletrap pulled into the parking lot. These people are really following me. I walked inside and said hey to Jesse, the man at the counter, who's always there. Determined to mind my own business, I picked up the newspaper. Through the window, I saw the unkempt man leaving his car to come inside. I felt my jaw tighten. I continued my routine. The little bell jingled as he pushed open the front door. He looked around and saw me in the back. I was pouring coffee, and as he approached, I knew I'd had enough. I don't know why anyone needs a bar at 10 a.m., gay or otherwise. Last call was 8 hours ago. Before he said a word, I turned on him, and there was a little bit of freak out in my voice as I held up my hand. "Please go away. I cannot help you." He stared for a moment and then turned away in disgust and said to the cashier,
"What the hell's wrong with people around here? Where's the nearest Kmart? I need some diapers for my kid."
"Kmart? I thought you were looking for a gay bar." He looked at me like I was the crazy one.
"What in the hell would I need that?"
I stood with my coffee while Jesse at the counter directed him to drive up San Juan and take a left on Blanding. The man glanced my way once more, and I smiled politely. The bell jangled as he left the store. They say that every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. Whoever it is, I hope they fly far and true. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Lauren. And thank you to Kmart. Now we'll take some time to talk to a North Florida visual artist.
Artist photographer Linda Broadfoot, born in Jacksonville and a third-generation Floridian, grew up exploring the neighborhood swamp around Strawberry Creek in Arlington, which fueled her love for the natural world. Broadfoot, once a biology major, then studied photography and art history at University of North Florida, where she received her BA. These varied interests and experiences in science and the arts coalesced into photographic studies of insects and plant forms.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Linda Broadfoot. Linda, you were telling me that you grew up in Arlington, my old stomping ground, and you got down in the swamp at a very young age. Could you tell me about that?
Well, when I grew up here in Jacksonville, Arlington was just a tiny new suburb, and I spent all my time across the street in the woods. What amazed me and still does is all the nature there, the tadpoles and crawdaddies, daddy long legs, and it inspired me and still does.
I took a tour of your house, and it was full of so many things that I just wanted to mess with. And then we headed back to Linda's backyard, and she's got a beehive back there. And maybe some of you were coming and you actually saw a short movie we showed of the bees swarming in Linda's backyard, which you just caught on film one day.
Yeah, I was. I'm making a new body of work, a new project. And in that, I take photographs of the bees. I leave the camera on a tripod. I make an outdoor studio. And I was making these photographs of the bees' trails where the camera is open for like a second or so, so it leaves traces of the sunlight on the bees' wings. And the bees got more and more active, and I kind of backed off for a minute, and I thought, I'll take a video with my iPhone. And as I was doing that, they got more and more active, and one actually ran into my arm and stung me, and I backed off and said, wait a minute. And I realized that what was happening was they were swarming. And that's when the mama bee, the queen, leaves with half her children, and they start a new hive. And luckily, they hung out in my neighbor's cedar tree, and she knows about bees, and she was okay with that.
So this next book project that you're making, it actually looks like a hive.
Yeah, it does. I found some poems. I lived in New York last winter, and so New York Public Library was my garden. And I found some texts from a British poet laureate, Carol Ann Duffy, and she had 9 bee poems, and so I got permission from her to reprint them, and I letterpress printed them, and they're going to be paired with my images, and actually in a very small constructed beehive. So you have to take the top off and take the frames out that would normally hold honey. They'll hold the poems and the pictures.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
So, Linda, what is it about photography that allows you to express living in this certain place at this certain time?
Well, I have always loved trying to capture the present moment and try to live in it. But with photography, I can find that slice of time and record it and share it. And that, to me, is just wonderful.
And what you do with it is gorgeous. If you haven't had a chance, please take a look in her lobby on your way out. Linda, thank you so much for being on the show. Linda Broadfoot, everybody.
In an effort to help our loyal listeners reconnect with their rural past, Swamp Radio debuts a new feature, Ask Swamp Lady. We've invited Miss Myrta Lynn Crosby, mother of 6, grandmother of 9, lifelong resident of a 10-acre farm west of Bryceville, to respond to your queries. We debut Ask Swamp Lady, bringing old Florida answers to your real-life questions.
Yep.
Our first question is from Linda Cousins of Fruit Cove.
Dear Swamp Lady, I planted 2 orange trees and a lime on the zero lot line of my yard. Now my neighbor is helping herself to my oranges. How do I tell her not to?
Good rural question. Miss Myrta, what is your old Florida solution to Linda's difficulty?
You tell that neighbor you got a switch that'll fit her backside.
Oh. I was hoping for something a little less confrontational.
You give her a price for the oranges and tell her you want it in cash.
Hmm. Do you have any suggestions where I don't actually have to talk to her?
Fine, don't say nothing. The meek shall inherit an empty tree. Looky here. You don't have to be all brambly with them. Maybe your neighbor was raised by raccoons and don't know no better. Just tell them nicely you was saving these oranges for your dear mama who hand squeezes her own juice every morning, and you was going to make ambrosia custard for her with the rest, so you need what the tree got. If they decent folk, they get the message.
Well, what if they don't get the message?
Well, the next time you see them rustling in your tree, you go out there with your shotgun.
Shotgun?
Simmer down. You ain't gonna shoot nobody. You're just gonna go out there, walk up on them, and act surprised. Oh, it's you. Good Lord, I almost shot you. I thought somebody was stealing from me.
That sounds too drastic.
Well, go polish your head if you want to be a doorknob. Just tell them, help yourself. I suggest you go pick your oranges while you still got them and make your mama some nice custard.
All right. Thank you, Linda Cousins of Fruit Cove.
Our next letter is from listener Brian Inmont of Avondale, who writes,
"Dear Miss Murda, my girlfriend and I take yoga class together, and guys are always hitting on her, offering pointers. Let me help you with your half moon. Let me show you feathered peacock. How should I handle this?"
It sounds like what you want to do is keep the possum out of your persimmons. Because, you know, a possum gonna come along, climb up your tree, and sample everything within reach. That sweet, juicy persimmon you've been eyeing all week gets riper and juicier for Saturday. It done got half eaten.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you can't sit out there all day, and it won't help if you did, because possums feed at night. So what you got to do is get your small animal trap.
A trap?
From the feed store or the hardware store if you're going to town, God help you. So you set up the trap under the tree and set a nice ripe persimmon in the trap. And the possum comes around the tree, smells the ripe persimmon. He's going to eat that first before climbing the tree. But the trap's going to trip down and get him, and there you go.
But what am I going to do with the possum?
You're going to shoot it and cook it in a stew. What do you think?
I'm not going to shoot it. It's an animal that has every right
to your persimmons. Fine. Give it shoes and send it to school. I don't care what you do.
Are you suggesting I trap my rival and shoot him?
Don't act like you ain't thought about it. No. You just go be worthy and attentive, gentlemen. The rest is out of your hands. Now get out of here and grow a pair.
Our next letter comes from Madison Cooper in Lakewood.
Dear Swamp Lady, all my girlfriends are tweeting on Twitter, and I'm afraid that they're talking about me. Do you think I should start tweeting too?
Now here's what you gotta do. You gotta chop up about a cup and a half of fresh pecans. Get yourself a cup of sugar, a cup and a half cane syrup. Boil it together a couple of minutes. Beat in 4 eggs. Pour in a couple of tablespoons of melted butter. Teaspoon of vanilla, good for what ails you. And add the pecans.
But what? I don't see what this has to do with Twitter.
I'm teaching you how to make a pecan pie. Everybody likes pecan pie. This gives you a useful skill, so now you got something to do. You ain't worried about what people are saying about you.
I don't... I don't see what pie has to do with people talking about me.
Ain't nobody talking about you, sunshine. They're talking about themselves, same as everybody. If you bake them a pie, they might say something nice about you. They might not. Either way, you make yourself useful, and most of your problems go away.
But I
don't... Now get out of here and go bake a pie, scat!
Thank you, Miss Murda Lynn Crosby. Our voice of old Florida. Remember, listeners, send your questions to AskSwampLady@SwampRadio.com. Until next time.
Here's a wonderful mom memory written by writer Mary Harvey and performed by our own Tony Phillips. It's called Mama's Terrible Year. Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Phillips.
''1965 was a terrible year for my mama. When I think back on it now, my clearest memory of her is seeing Mama early, early in the morning, standing at the kitchen sink, coffee mug in hand, sipping coffee, staring intensely out the window, the gentle first light of day glancing through her sheer nightgown. A rare sight, as before this year, she had always been careful to put on a bathrobe before coming downstairs. She would never be caught by her kids in that flimsy nightie. But this was the year that our father was gone. She was alone with us. Left her, you're thinking? No, not at all. Just 2.5 hours drive away. He had lost his job as a college dean and had to take another one teaching. So during the week, he lived in an apartment in the other town. We laughed and called it his bachelor's pad. Nothing could be further from the truth. Separating my parents was as hard as getting the yolk and white of an egg apart after they'd been scrambled. Theirs was truly a symbiotic relationship. It was excruciatingly painful for them not to be together. On the weekends, he came home to her. Sometimes he even drove home on Wednesdays and surprised us. Well, surprised her. We didn't mind so much. We kind of liked being fatherless. She was devastated without him. That's the part I didn't understand. Our mama wasn't your typical woman who needed her man to be whole. Our mama taught German and French language classes at the college. She was president of the local American Association of University Women chapter. She handled all the family finances, prepared the income taxes, even invested our money in the stock market. She reared four children. To an outsider, it might appear that Mama didn't need a man. She was as independent as they come. But on Monday morning, he would get up and leave at 5 a.m. before any of us and be out the door. He had to get back to his pad to shower and shave in time to make his 8 o'clock class in world religions. And that's when I would see her at the sink, sipping coffee and staring out the window. Lost. When she finally realized I was standing there, she would shake herself out of the haze. The strength would come rushing back to her body. "What are you doing, sweetheart? Don't just stand there. Come in here and get your oatmeal," she said, starting to rush about. "And drink your OJ. You need those vitamins. Jack is going to drop you off at school this morning. I have a faculty meeting." She was back. My mama, who was strong enough to take care of us all, purposefully moving about, getting ready for the day. Except for those little moments, that one awful year, when he slipped away and left her. Sad, helpless, so early in the day. Thank goodness it was just a single terrible year. Thank you.
Tony Phillips, everyone. We have had a wonderful full season here, and it would not have been possible without the Cultural Council Spark Grant Program. Can we have a round of applause for the Cultural Council? We'll be offering a full season next year and be taking some road trips to places like the Ritz Theater in Brunswick and St. Augustine, and we would love to have you guys along. Now it's time to check in with the natural world. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Kevin Bodge.
Hi, Ian.
Hey, Kevin, so I was just talking to Linda about the bees. What do you start thinking about when I mention bees in Florida?
Well, you know, Ian, there's been big increases in interest and the number of beekeepers here in Florida. The number of registered beekeepers here have increased from 900 to over 3,000 in just the past 5 years. And those kind of increases, along with splitting hives and multiplying them, are helping to offset a national decline in bees. Our decline here in Florida is not quite so great. But, you know, beekeeping is more than just a backyard hobby in a way to collect honey. It's actually broadly a big agricultural industry, like farming.
You said the other night you were driving down the road and you were behind some trucks that were carrying bees.
Yeah, in fact, I was driving down to Stewart on 95, and there were three trucks in front of me, flatbed trucks that were piled high with boxes of bees. And a lot of the bees had ventured out to see what was going on. That was a mistake. They were hanging on to the back about 70 miles an hour. Waiting to get home from Florida. Beekeepers in Florida colonize bees and send them all around the United States for hire in order to cultivate crops in other places, like almonds in California, blueberries in Maine, cranberries up in New Jersey. Pollination by honeybees is responsible for a third of the food that we eat in the United States. the nuts and grain and fruit and vegetables, and our hired out bees from Florida help feed the nation.
So the life of a hired bee is not an easy life.
Not at 70 miles an hour down 95. You know, bees set out in the morning, not really sure where they're going to go, to discover where the flower is, or flowers and nectar is that they're going to eat that day. And they spread culture from place to place, and then they bring this information home, and they spread that information and that wealth, the nectar, with the rest of the colony. They kind of remind me of explorers over the last 500 years. You know, honeybees are not native to Florida. Kate's comments about the citrus trees remind me. Honeybees, like the citrus trees, were brought to North America by settlers back in the 1600s. And by 1850, they had spread all the way across Utah. So they're explorers and information gatherers like we are. When you see a bee, it's easy to get scared. But when you look at them a different way, you realize that they're out discovering, spreading culture, and bringing that culture home to their hive each night.
So that bee might just be the Ponce de Leon of the bee world. So don't kill him.
And making the grains and fruit and nut that you eat the next day for breakfast.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Kevin Bodge. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Derek Coughlin.
Ireland is not known for its cuisine. But even on an island of murderously awful cooks, my mother stood out. She couldn't boil water. And she may have been the only woman in Ireland who was clueless when it came to potatoes. If there was a bad bag of potatoes in a shop, my mother would come home with them. She wouldn't know a good potato if you hit her over the head with one. And when she cooked them, they tasted the way an old bean-fed dog smells. Once, right after I moved to America, I sent her a basket of pink grapefruits as a present. And we didn't have a lot of citrus in Ireland, and nobody in my family had ever seen a pink grapefruit before. I had them FedExed over, and a couple of days later, I called my mother to see if she liked them. No. And no wonder America is the way it is. Who in their right minds would eat those things? They were horrible. It did not matter how long I boiled them. They still tasted awful. They'll never take the place of our potatoes. She boiled them. My mother, a home economics teacher, boiled grapefruit. Today, 20 years after the event, my mind still boggles when I think of what she did. She boiled grapefruit and served it with ham and cabbage. I would have loved to have seen my father's face when she plonked that down in front of him. Thank you.
Thank you, Derek. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun mixture of music and phraseology from the great North Florida area. Dive on in, y'all, the water's fine.
Thanks, Andy. And now a portion of the show where we check in with a North Florida poet. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Miss Tiffany Melanson.
The first poem I'm going to share with you today is a sonnet for my daughter. Watching you at the beach, for Mia at 12. Daughter, I watch the bare skin of your days make those near us blush. You alter orbits I've given you, bearing open your age and indecisive heat. I know how this feels, to move along the ledge of yourself, so close to bursting out of the tight fit of your bud, to walk the edge of your interior gulf, a way to shove into a wave of intangible fear. What can I do but watch it happen? Hold you back from the open end with the sheer will to make it stop. Mothers have a role. I choose to turn into the open sea. Daughter, it's time. Learn to swim against me. Thank you. Pickup truck. From my window, I watch a girl and two boys get out of a truck at the curb of our neighbor's driveway, wired and desperate as stray dogs. For a second, I think she's my daughter, the same long tail of hair extending down her back, a soft halo of fuzzy curl bunched around her eyes. One of the boys is the neighbor's son, long gone from the house, his hair matted and mangy, stuck to his forehead with a paste of dirt and sweat. The boys disappear behind the house to unchain the stepfather's dirt bike before taking turns trying to hotwire the ignition in the front lawn, while the girl leans against the driver's seat, a pair of ripped jean shorts sagging around her small waist. I know why a girl stands at the end of a driveway with her fingers in her mouth. Why she gets into the cab of a beat-up truck wedged between a stick shift and two dirty boys. Why she likes the ripped jeans, the feel of hot vinyl against her naked thighs, and a cool breeze through a cracked window. Why a mother's heart stops beating when she sees it happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiffany. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Arley White and the Willow Wax.
So, do you remember like 3 summers ago when we had that insane rain? I mean, it was torrential, relentless, crazy rain. I was at work one day in June that summer when I got this phone call from my mom. Your father's gone crazy. He says he doesn't love me anymore and he's gone out of the house and I don't know what to do. You've got to come over here right now. I'm on my way. Now, my dad had all kinds of things that were wrong with him, and he was pretty much blind, and he'd gone out in that rain. This can't be good. I need more information. So I called back from the car, and this time, thankfully, Dad answered the phone. Hey, how's everything going? Everything's fine. We don't need anyone coming over here right now. Oh, too late. On my way. Can't wait to see you.
We're alone now. We keep each other company. Don't know what we saw, but now we're seeing things the same. And if we don't, we'll sing the songs that we're mindful to let our love flow.
When I got there, they were in their respective corners. I asked them to tell me what happened, and the good news was that they essentially told me the same story. I mean, it was like listening to two witnesses describe a car wreck, and she told me what it looked like from her corner, and he told me what it looked like from his, but it was, you know, the same wreck. And you know, there is this tipping point that happens at some time in life when you start to talk to your parents as if they were your children. So I says to my mom, right? I says, you need to go in the den and wait there until I'm ready to come and talk to you. I basically put her in time out. Even more surprising, she went. I turned to my dad and I said, so what's going on? He said, nothing, everything's fine. So I refined the question. What's going on today? He got really quiet for a long time and then he said, there are just too many things that are wrong with me and it can't be fixed and it's just not fair. And he was right. He had diabetes and Parkinson's and that kind of macular degeneration that causes people to hallucinate. It's often confused with dementia, which is what it leads to as your mind tries to decipher more and more the things that your eyes no longer can. For a while, you can reason yourself away from those images that, you know, just logically make no sense. The problem was that my mother simply had no patience for any of that. Robert, you know there are no children or cats, or floaty things, or burglars, or whatever it was, in this house. Dad and I sat there together very quietly. It occurred to me that this was really the first time that this guy, who used to run the United States Navy, for crying out loud, had been so open, transparent, and vulnerable with me, and I didn't want to lose this time together. We held our hands, and after a while I said, I've got to go talk to Mom.
When it comes back hard. When she comes back deep. I ain't doing too good lately. Falling awake and getting up sleep.
So what's going on? Oh, he's just driving me crazy. What does that even mean? He won't let me do anything. Well, what do you want to do that he won't let you do? Well, for one thing, he won't let me turn out the lights. I know, right? What does that mean, Mom? Well, it seems that my dad liked to go to bed at around 8:30, and my mom would stay up on the computer until 10 o'clock or so. I mean, she was the computer queen, and once she got on Facebook, there was just no stopping her. Dad had had a brilliant career in the Navy, so we had lived all over the planet, and Mom would track people down from throughout our lives and adventures and friend them and actually keep up. And at 10 o'clock, she would start to wind down. She'd go into the bedroom, wake up my father and ask him, Robert, is it time to turn out the lights? Can I turn out the lights? And he would say, no, Mary, I have to do that. And he would get up from a dead sleep, and he would turn out the lights. So I said to her, well, did you ever think that you might just go ahead and turn out the lights and go to bed? Or maybe you could turn out the lights and just tell him you'd done it, you know, if you want some nighty-night time with him. I never thought of that. Well, let's go and talk to him, see what he says.
Well, I got a man who's way out of town, and he's thinking of me, thinking of me. I don't lose sleep, cause I know he's with me. I know he is with me. Well, I got a man who's way out of tune. Wants to play the fiddle, but he wants it too soon. Wants it too soon, but it still sounds true. I can hear him in my dreams.
So we went back into the den. Dad, Mom has a question she wants to ask you. Robert? I want to know why I can't turn out the lights. Dad was very quiet. He looked at her for a very long time, and then he looked down, then he looked up, then he looked at me, and then he said, every bite of food I have to put into my mouth, your mother has to make for me, and if I have to go anywhere, your mother has to take me there. Turning the lights out at night is the one thing that I can do to show her that she is loved and safe in her home. I know, right? Mom, do you have anything that you want to say to Dad? I guess he can turn out the lights. The picture that I have in my head as I drove away that afternoon is of the two of them standing under the eaves of the garage. A sheet of rain separated us and put them in a kind of fade. But I could see them reach to each other and with their inside hands while they waved goodbye together.
We'll cast out and say hello to county lines. We'll spread out and make friends just to say goodbye. We'll slow down and watch time crawl around. It's the falling out. It's the making up. It's the times getting tough. We can do without, we can make enough, we will share what we've got.
Robert Arley White and the Willow Axe. I know there is some serious eye dabbing going on. I am not the only one. That's about all the time we have. Thank you so much for spending part of your Sunday afternoon with us. Look for this podcast on SoundCloud, Facebook, and on our homepage, swampradiojax.com. A very special thanks to Ms. Liz McDonald of the Times Union Center and her wonderful staff, Mason Martin and Aaron at the Cultural Council. Don't let anyone tell you that Jacksonville is not an exciting place.
Lauren's going to take us out with an oldie but a goodie.
I was standing by my window on a cold and cloudy day, when I saw the hearse come rolling for to carry my mother away. With the circle be unbroken, by and by, Lord, by and by, there's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Well, I said to an undertaker, undertaker, please drive slow, 'cause that lady you are carrying, Lord, I hate to see her go.
Will the circle be unbroken by and by? There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Oh, I followed close behind her, tried to hold up and be brave, but I could not hide my sorrow when they laid her in that grave.
Our director for today's show was April Darris. Our associate producer is Chris Farrell. Our production manager is Hurley Winkler. Our sound engineer was Mr. Don Ringhofer of Stay Tuned Studios. Special thanks to Karen Fagans, Melissa Ross, and the gang at WJCT 89.9, Liz McDonald and the Times Union Center for the Arts, and SMG. Swamp Radio was sponsored by a Spark grant from the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. Spark culture, spark change. You can listen to this broadcast on demand at our website, swampradiojax.com, and on SoundCloud.
Thanks for listening. Join us for a Swamp Radio Christmas, Sunday, December 21st at the Florida Theater at 3 p.m. For tickets and information, go to swampradiojax.com.